Chapter 15. Point Sublime. Point Sublime is one of the most important promontories on the North Rim. It was here that the geologist poet, Clarence Dutton, wrote many of his descriptions of canyon scenery. He says, the supreme views are to be obtained at the extremities of the long promontories, which jut out between the recesses far into the gulf. Sitting upon the edge, we contemplate the most sublime and awe-inspiring spectacle in the world. The length of canyon revealed clearly and in detail at Point Sublime is about 25 miles in each direction. Towards the northwest, the vista terminates behind the projecting mass of Powell's Plateau. But again to the westward may be seen the crests of the upper walls reaching through the Kanab and Duinkerit plateaus, and finally disappearing in the haze above 75 miles away. The space under immediate view from our standpoint, 50 miles long and 10 to 12 wide, is thronged with a great multitude of objects so vast in size, so bold and majestic in form, so infinite in their details, that as the truth gradually reveals itself to the perceptions, it arouses the strongest emotions. Several times I had started to Point Sublime, but there were difficulties about the trail. Sometime before 1900, Mr. Bass completed a trail on the north side of the river, up under the shoulders of Powell Plateau, and out to the desired location. Starting for Point Sublime. In August, 1901, a party was arranged, consisting of Mrs. J.B. Gaylor, of Ridgewood, New Jersey, a learned doctor from St. Louis, Mr. Bass and myself. On Sunday, September 1st, after loading 3 pack animals with provisions and bedding needed for the trip, we set out down the trail, headed for Point Sublime. To the ferry, nothing of particular interest occurred. From this point on, I shall use the diary of Mrs. Gaylor as the basis of my descriptions, adding thereto or condensing when necessary. It is written in the present tense, which will be preserved throughout. At the river. She says, the sight of the river rouses me to a considerable pitch of enthusiasm. How dirty and muddy a river it is, and how it roars and rages. There is a great rapid a quarter of a mile above where we cross. While we are to cross in still water, the current is strong, and bears one on to the worst rapid in the whole river. It is named Stanton Rapid, for at that point one of his boats was dashed to splinters. He numbered it 241. We part with our animals near a little shelter at the top of the Archean rocks, and scramble down a slippery trail. Crossing the river, with some trepidation I enter the boat. A few articles are thrown in, Dad takes the oars, someone pushes us off, and we are fairly on the stream. The boat soon strikes the sandy landing on the other side, a considerable distance below, and Dad hands me out with care and courtesy. I occupy myself looking at the structure of the rocks. There are many curious faults and flexures. The river very strange, walls black, gloomy and precipitous. The landing on the south side was solid rock, here a bit of sandy beach between bars of rock. The doctor is already here. He makes a fire of driftwood near the wall of black rock under which is the stretch of sand. I pick out my sleeping place, and begin the making of my bed. James, Bass, and Dad go back and forth across the river many times to bring our stuff, and daylight is entirely gone long before the job is completed. Supper on the sand. I try to help in carrying things up the bank, but am too tired to be of much use. Gather wood for fire. The men had prepared supper by firelight, which we take crouching, sitting, or lying down on the sand. The air is mild and soft. Moonlight. Monday, September 2, 1901. 3 a.m. Writing by moonlight. The roar of the rapids is constant. One hears it even in sleep. There are occasionally little swirling, flapping noises. What a wonderful place for me, a quiet New Jersey woman, to be sleeping in. To the Shinumo. When Mr. Bass awakes, he shows me a large pool of river water in the rocks. It is settled, and is clear and cold. After breakfast, the doctor and I scramble up the rocky trail to the plateau above, mount two of the burros and start for the Shinumo camp. It is 6:30, when we start quite early I should call it, and we reach camp at 8:00 a.m. A stiff climb nearly all the way. What a clear mountain torrent the Shinumo is. It is like our eastern creeks. Its rocky sides are lined with willows or other green trees, and it comes splashing and dashing down as pure and sweet as can be. Shinumo Camp and Garden. Tea, the camp is a novelty to me. Part tent, part wood, part rock, part indoors, part outdoors. The fireplace is of stone, and out of doors, and the table is a great slab of red sandstone resting on two heavy rock supports. It would hold a ton. There are two good beds. Across the stream a little way down is the Shinumo Garden. It seems incredible that there can be a garden here with excellent melons, cantaloupes, radishes, onions, corn, squash, beans, and with fair-sized peach and other trees. They tell me it is a prehistoric garden, and that it was discovered by following the ruins of ancient irrigating ditches down to the spot. In the wall beyond are several small cliff dwellings and storage houses for corn and other vegetables. There are tremendous tilts and flexures in the rock walls on each side. Mr. Bass and Dad go off to hunt for the horses and mules we are to use on the trip. The burros will not travel fast enough, though they are going to put me on a large burro they name Belshazzar. After lunch each spends the afternoon as he chooses. Mr. James invites me to come and visit a snuggery that he has established, where I find him writing. He reads what he has written, also part of Browning's Rabbi Ben Ezra. ... Tuesday, September 3, 1901. At and preparing to leave Shinumo. The magnitude of the undertaking appalls me. It is so much more tremendous than I anticipated. The start. The saddling and packing of the animals occupies much time. We start about 9 o'clock with 9 animals, 6 burros, 2 horses and 1 mule. My Belshazzar is slow but very sure. Mr. James rides the mule, a red creature, very nervous and excitable, and which they tell me is not well broken, and does not like to be ridden. Ascending the trail. We go up a long trail over a ridge, with loose soil, quite barren. The ascent is not very steep, but the hillside across which the trail passes slopes down to canyons and precipices which suggest unfathomable depths. At one place the trail, for about 50 feet, is over ashes or some exceedingly loose material that allows the animals to slide very quickly down towards the deep precipice on the right, and the sight is most trying to my nerves, but Belshazzar's deliberate walk and sure-footedness soon restore my usual equanimity. From this we pass into a canyon or series of canyons, where one can plainly see that in the remote past a torrent has poured down, tearing away the soil and tossing huge boulders about. Many naked rocky ledges show, and my burro is occasionally required to carry me up stone steps. View of canyon. Presently we enter a narrow canyon through which flows a clear, cool stream. Walls of red rock on both sides with much gray stone. Many large sycamores, cottonwoods and alders, grass, and flowers, with maidenhair ferns on the rocks. We stop for lunch under a big cottonwood tree, about 4,500 feet elevation. We leave this lovely spot and go up the canyon which makes a sharp turn to the left. This is Mew of Canyon. Climbing higher. After a little distance we emerge from this canyon and leave the stream. Then begins a tremendous climb which I accomplish by clinging to the coattails of the guide with one hand and sometimes with both hands, he holding tight to the burro's tail ahead of him. Belshazzar accepts this to me novel situation with accustomed cheerfulness, and does his best to haul us up the mountain, stopping occasionally to recover his breath. Finishing this part of the ascent, we come to a fertile plateau with trees in great number and variety. At an angle of the canyon below, nearly opposite the steep trail up which we have just climbed, is the eroded terminus of a great promontory, carved into a high and slender pedestal upon which stands a rude figure not unlike one of the wooden statues seen in the old Franciscan missions of California. Below this, the rock strata are curved and twisted into all kinds of shapes. In one place there is a fold, where the strata seem to have been curved, and forced almost into a circle. On this plateau we still see the canyon with its perpendicular gray stone walls. It falls below our trail, and we ride along the brink of it, and down in the bottom, see the black entrance to a cave. Then we come to the dry bed of a stream which we follow until we come to water. The quantity is small, but it is sweet and pure. We camp here, elevation 6,100 feet. The canyon walls are steep, and the bottom narrow. We are in a heap together, rolls of bedding, campfire, burros, horses, mules, men, kayaks containing food, saddles and packs, myself, etc., all in a very small space. The charm of the north side. The north side of the canyon is much more beautiful and diversified than the other, and no one can really know the canyon who does not cross and climb to the summit on this side. There is a greater variety of fine views, a good proportion of fertile country, and a far better opportunity for studying the geological formation. Wednesday, September 4th, 1901. We have had a very cold night, and though my bed was most comfortable, I awake feeling rather miserable. My courage almost fails, and I talk of giving up, but after a while feel better, and decide to go on. A discussion goes on, as to the time we shall spend on the trip, and the determination is finally reached that, if possible, we shall return to this spot from Point Sublime in 4 days. The little stream, which failed in the night, now runs freely, the result of condensation of moisture in the atmosphere above. We start again, and ascend a steep, loose trail in the manner of yesterday. The trail is very pleasant here, springs of excellent water coming out from under the cross-bedded sandstone, and trees of considerable size shadowing the way. The saddle. At the saddle there is a long pause for repacking the burros. I am started up the next and last steep climb on my burro. After a little the trail becomes very steep and dangerous looking, and I am ordered to dismount and finish the climb on my feet with the aid of Belshazzar's tail. He is in a hurry and sometimes very unceremonious with me. On the Kaibab. We are now on the top of the north side, really on the summit of the Kaibab Plateau. Dutton Point, the great salient promontory of Powell Plateau, seen so clearly from base camp on the south rim, is close before me, and views and vistas in every direction are glorious and sublime. We ride on to Swamp Point. The views are magnificent, but who shall attempt to describe them? We soon enter a pine forest. Tall pine trees and Douglas spruces are the principal trees, with many beautiful groups of white aspen. Rich grass and wild oats and great quantities of beautiful flowers. We see many deer. We stop for lunch and some photographing is done. Kanabanats. After lunch we start for Kanabanats and pass through many grassy valleys leading into one another with many windings. We have some difficulty in keeping the right trail. Mr. Bass has an excellent general knowledge of the right direction, but he has had to wander to and fro in his desire to find water and dare not leave us, so we have to accompany him in his searches. The result is we cannot reach Kanabanats tonight. We go up one very picturesque part of the trail, where a deep gulch lies on the right filled with old pine trees and many fallen ones, a true specimen of the primeval forest. We see a small band of cattle grazing. After luncheon I attempt to walk alone in the forest, and immediately lose my sense of direction. After some yelling on my part the men come to my rescue. We start on again, the doctor putting the saddle on Belshazzar for me. When I dismount, the result of unskilled effort appears. 4. As soon as I throw my weight over to the left, the saddle turns, and I am dumped upon the ground. We camp at an altitude of 8,000 feet. Short of water. Short of water. T. Thursday, September 5, 1901. Near Canabanats. 6 a.m. Very cold. Breakfast is prepared. I am allowed 2 tablespoonfuls of water for toilet purposes. I help a little with the cooking. We are to a thick wood. It is a fine, clear, sunny day, but a chilling wind is blowing. Off for water. W. We make a late start, and go on to Canabanats, where we expect to find water. We arrive there about 10. Soon afterwards 3 cattlemen come by. A conference with them is held. They talk doubtfully about water, but tell where they think it may be found. They are much surprised to hear that I have crossed the canyon. With their consent I Kodak them. After they depart, Mr. Bass and Mr. James start off for water, Mr. Bass with 1 horse and all the canteens to a spring he knows, of where fine water is to be had, and Mr. James with all the animals to a place, where water fit for stock may be found. They both return in about 2 hours, pack the animals, and we start again about 3:20 p.m. for Point Sublime. We go through several grassy, well-wooded ravines, very nearly on the level, through much fallen timber and thickets. Then we cross several of them. I scramble down off Belshazzar, and down a very steep hill. Mount again and go on by myself, zigzagging up a steep hill. This is mostly through an oak thicket without a trail. Over another ravine, and I am sure now we are near the end of our journey. Up another slight ascent, and we come in sight of the canyon. We have left the tall trees and the thick grass, and now have only mesquites, cedars, yucca, and cactus. But we have a good trail. On Point Sublime. At last we are on the point itself. So ardently desired, and with only an hour of daylight left, we begin to study the wonderful panorama. I am photographed rounding up the burrows. I am given a sheltered place under a juniper tree for my bed, and make an arrangement with my canvas, to keep off the wind. A very comfortable bed. This point runs out far into the chasm, is narrow for a considerable distance, sides very precipitous and the edges describing a very irregular line. Very near the extreme end is a clump of cedars, with trunks and lower branches so densely matted together, as to form a good shelter on 2 sides from the wind, which blows furiously. It is in this shelter that I place my bed, making with my canvas a protection against the wind on the 3rd side, so that my sleeping place is as cozy and warm as can be. Friday, September 6, 1901. At Point Sublime. I sleep well and wake refreshed. Many photographs are taken. The men go to explore another point not far off, and I stay in camp. I rest as well as I can in the face of such a stupendous spectacle. Dutton's descriptions are wonderfully vivid, and accurate, yet words do not convey ideas to those whose imagination is not large enough to realize the full meaning of the words. On the return, we start on the return at 11 o'clock, having spent about 17 hours on the point. At first we follow the trail by which we came. Then our leader disregards the trail, and makes our course in a more direct line. We go over ridges, some of them terribly steep. We go through several lovely valleys with the ridges that overlook the canyon on our left. The air is still and cool down where we are, but we can see the tops of the trees that show above the ridges tossed about in a violent wind, and can hear its roaring through the forest. We camp about 3/4 of a mile from a spring, and by orders I sleep under a tree in company with many beetles. It is very cold. Campfire is comforting. Into the canyon again. S. Saturday, September 7, 1901. We leave camp at 8:20. I put out fire, while men are packing. Find track of small 5-toed animal on the trail. We go by cattle trails, a shortcut to Swamp Point, through the forest, over ridges, through thickets and some of the grassy valleys. Out on Swamp Point again, I am shown base camp on the south rim. It is scarcely discernible even with glasses, the distance is so vast. We all walk down the steep descent from this point and make quick time to the place where we camped September 3. We descend 1,900 feet in 1 hour and 20 minutes. After lunch, the men then catch much of the remaining provisions and cooking outfit for future use, and we go on riding as fast as possible down the dry bed of the stream. Then out of this, through a narrow canyon, past the gray rock walls and gulch with black cave at bottom, and slide in the talus above, over the fertile plateau, long descent on foot, where as I zigzag I see the men and the burrows, what seem to be hundreds of feet below. On down another dry stream bed, many stony descents in a shut-in canyon. Out of this into more open country, but over ridges, up and down. We come down to that part of the trail which I feared most in daylight, and now we have only the starlight to enable us to descend. Mr. Bass takes me in charge and Mr. James goes up over the ridges to round up the burrows which have been left to their own devices. A torch of sagebrush is lighted to find the trail. At last we reach the bottom. The men throw some blankets on the ground for me, and I fall upon them. They go down to the Shinumo, which is only a few yards away, prepare supper and bring a cup of hot coffee for me. I return with them, make my bed, eat a hearty supper, and then fall asleep with the roar of the Shinumo in my ears. My bed is comfortable, and I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.